Thank you very much to Jimmy and Joan and Don for running the Hemingway series and for letting me read tonight. I'm going to begin with two poems about my parents, the first of which appeared in Upagus. Papa. Before cell phones, email, tweets, I remember conversation, the back and forth of it, how my father drove across Europe without even the radio on, hours unrolling behind us, filled with debate, questions, his unfailing delight in hearing me recite four lines of a poem by Robert Frost, lines that he loved but couldn't remember, even our silences communal. The next poem appeared in Louisiana Literature. What Matters? They sat on a bench, side by side, backs to the camera, watching the Rhine or the Rhone, I can't remember which, and it doesn't matter, some European river, and I took their picture in the long ago. Now at night, thinking of them before I sleep, that is the photo I remember, how it hung on the wall of the house I grew up in, with my father's handwritten note stuck on the corner, a love note to my mother, whom he never married, which mattered then to her family, but doesn't matter now to me, except as a ghost of her sadness. And it doesn't matter that their outlines are blurred, or that I can't see their faces, or that much of my childhood is smaller than I remember, because the part that matters, the part we try to wedge into the word love, is large enough that I still can't reach its end. Next, a cat poem that appeared in Songs of Eretz Poetry Review. Oh, cat. The car needs an oil change, but that is irrelevant. Your cat mat needs to be washed, which is a serious matter. The exhibition about crane flies at the Carnegie Museum is of no concern to you. Your mouse is wedged under the sofa, which is an emergency. The destabilization of a foreign country neither here nor there, or more correctly, decidedly not here, not in your house, not on your street, and hence quite beside the point. The melting of polar ice, not pertinent. The keyboard cluttering your desk, an insult. Your chin turned toward my hand so that I might stroke it, imperative that action is taken at once. The supernova in M101, a topic of monumental insignificance. The death of our own sun in 6 billion years, yawn. The assertion that the yogurt is not yours, preposterous. The further claim that the chicken is not yours, vile heresy. The delay in your supper time, contemptible. Recent allegations that you are portly and should diet. Monstrous, insolent, outrageous lies. The next poem is about my son back when he was 4 years old. Okay, sorry, yes. Yeah. That's the end of that one. We're moving on to my son, who would be very glad he's not here. When he was 4 years old, sizing up, I sat in my son's classroom for the first hour of his first day while he measured away with a red and yellow tape measure, finding the length of the rooms, the width of the dividing wall, the height of a train tunnel. He might have been a builder, an architect, an artist, so serious, so engrossed, as he checked the dimensions to make sure there was room for him. For fairness's sake, one about my daughter as well. Holding you. In the dark, I lifted you out of sleepiness into my arms, school ahead of you, but for the minute that I carried you down the stairs to breakfast, you were a larger version of your toddler self, your head on my shoulder, your limbs still floppy. The universe so vast that if I walked for 7 years, I wouldn't even reach the moon, the sun 3,000 years beyond that, and the next nearest star 800 million years away, And in that vastness of length, only I had the privilege of holding you. I'm going to read three poems about reading, starting with one that's forthcoming in Ship of Fools. On Vacation. Before the day starts, before my family wakes, that half hour undercover, trying not to make a sound, trying not to bump a leg, an arm, any part that might stir or wake, that stolen half hour before I must banish my best beloved book back to the bag where it calls to me all day long. Climbing into books. I spent my summer worrying, everything distorted, inverted, wrong. Even in the swimming pool, holding my daughter as she splashed, her whole self radiating joy, even then I couldn't stop worrying. But when I read, everything else fell away. I climbed up into books like an addict, like the child I once was, stealing minutes, hours, reading whole books in a day, lightweight, insignificant, unimportant books that would never lead to clever witticisms to share with friends after supper. Instead, they saved me. Slowly I came back down from their trivial, frivolous heights to sit here at my computer, autumn on its way, almost myself again. Lost. Each night, we travel a few leagues further into the book in which I once lost myself, or so some long-ago observer might have said as I read it for the sixth or seventh or eighth time, a solitary child who lost herself in books, and this book most of all. Your company is grand. You may well be the best companion I have taken on this journey. But I was never lonely when I read alone. I walked behind Sam and Strider, Gandalf and Gimli and Gollum, with Tolkien's hand upon my shoulder. This is not where I was lost, but where I found myself. Okay. So I'm finally getting to the fantasy bit. I'm going to finish with two short poems from The Sign of the Dragon, my epic fantasy about the heroic King Zhao. The first 61 poems were published last year in Crowned, and in case any of you here like fantasy, I have brought six of my dragon poems printed out in little booklets. You're welcome to take a copy. These are free, the book is not. And this next poem is forthcoming in the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction. Kingship. Before King Zhao slew a demon, before the wild horses came to him, before he was crowned, before his sword was forged, before the palace foundations were laid, before his kingdom had a name, before the dragon who ordained his destiny hatched from out her shell, before those things, this tree, this silver apricot tree whose autumn leaves Zhao helps his youngest heap into a pile of gold. And silver apricot tree is another term for ginkgo trees, and they can live to be well over 1,000 years old. Okay. The last poem is about King Zhao's eldest son. It takes place 3 months after King Zhao has left for war. Words. Not a new sword, nor armor, nor a horse, not jade or silver, nor any of the gifts a prince might expect from his father on his 16th birthday. Instead, a letter, 11 pages, no mention of the war, stories often humorous of Keng's childhood, memories of the uncle Keng was named after. The final brushstrokes faltered, uneven, shaping words Keng hadn't needed to be told, that he already knew, that he read and reread each night by lantern light. Thank you very much.